Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host, and I'd like to give lots of gratitude out to Don Newsom, who is the BBS Radio King and has provided us this wonderful platform to raise consciousness by using Hollywood with positive media. I have a wonderful guest this evening. His name is Stephen H. Powers, and if you would like to go to a website where you can learn more about him, go to www.agapemedia-international.com. That's www.agapemedia-international.com. It's a long word, but worth typing. And the next one would be www.agapemedia-music.com. That would be shorter. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background on Stephen. I was very impressed when I read the bio. And when you meet Stephen, he's so self-effacing and humble and so down to earth that you wouldn't think that he has all these credits. He's educated at MIT, has 34 years of business and production experience. He was the former director of A&R, Artists and Repertoire, at Capitol Records in Hollywood, and was director of entertainment for the 1984 Los Angeles Olympics. I'm leaving out a lot because I'd really like to get Stephen on to tell you himself the rest of it. However, I will tell you this much more. He's got 27 years actually, in the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences, and he's produced and engineered or served as executive producer of more than 100 record albums, including work with Tina Turner, Duran Duran, Joe Cocker, Holly Near, The Beach Boys, Bonnie Raitt, Santana, Bob Hope, and Brian Setzer Orchestra, and he has earned numerous gold and platinum records that generated 4 number one pop hits in 1991. His million-selling John Lee Hooker album, The Healer, won a Grammy for Best Contemporary Blues Recording. Other recognition includes Producer of the Year, Music Executive of the Year, Independent Label of the Year, and he also got the Lifetime Achievement Award, and Powers also garnered an Emmy nomination for producing the PBS television show Swing Alive, starring Bob Hope and Les Brown, Sheena Easton, and Suzanne Somers. So, without further ado, I'm so excited to bring on Stephen Powers. Stephen, thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Kate, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to join you and to share the good news with your audience.
Yeah, and there's lots of good news going on. Where I first met you, I'll tell my listeners, is at the Agape Spiritual Center over in Culver City. And, you know, we'd been seeing each other here and there every Sunday when we come to church. And what I found out later is that you are very, very involved in their music department, and you are one of the people who is putting together the new CD for Reverend Michael Beckwith. It's Shapeshift Your Life. And I'm just wondering, has that been completed yet, or is it still just two tracks?
Well, that is one song. It's called Energetic Shapeshifter, and it is a sermon, actually, began as a sermon or talk delivered by Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith here at Agape.
Yes.
And it was then turned into a joyful, ecstatic dance, is the term that I'm using, dance track by the well-known producer Stephen Bray, who is most well-known for his work with Madonna, where he's created a lot of number one hits with her. He's also an Agape member, and my associate John Patoker. So we created this slam and dance track and cut the Rev's talk into that song using certain phrases that were repeated almost to create a sing-song verse-chorus structure so that you get an entire teaching while you're just having fun. So, but the answer to your question is that the entire album which we are creating is not yet completed. It is a work in progress, and it will be out, however, in 2009, and we will have, I don't know what it'll be titled, but we'll have an entire album of such teachings, you know, created to music.
I think I would call it Having It All.
Having It All? Oh, that's a good title.
Yeah,
because
there's nothing that Reverend Michael Beckwith is, for me anyway, such an example of having it all. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is just wide open heart, spirit flowing through him at all times, able to love every person, no matter who they are or what they've done. And the one thing I remember him saying is, there's one thing no person can ever do, and that is to cut themselves out of his heart.
Yes, he says that in his new film, which is also a co-production with Agape Media International and Elevate Films and Beyond Words, which is called Spiritual Liberation.
Right.
And in the film, he makes that comment about everyone, that he knows everyone that he meets, that he is so filled with love. And I appreciate your definition of having it all, because I think some people might immediately think that has something to do with materialism, you know, a great house, a great car, a lot of money or something. But, you know, as Reverend Michael teaches here at Agape, really it is having that connection to God and that awareness of our oneness with the universe, with the divine principles. And in that, always all this goodness manifests, all these great things, great relationships and other things, you know, come out of that. But it's not really about having all the material, but having all the awareness.
Right, right. And in consciousness, you can heal anything. In awareness, you can heal anything. And it's 22 years now that Reverend Michael, 22 years ago, had a recurring dream. And today, it's this wonderful, wonderful movement of Agape. And your part in it certainly does show itself. And, you know, there's no telling how far this can go. I'm thinking an international network of some sort where people can just tune in and get this wonderful knowledge, wisdom, spirit, vibration, frequency, feelings anytime, night or day that they want to. And I see that that's possible.
Well, you're thinking that, Kate, because it's already happening. So you're being in tune with that. There is actually an agreement that has already been made by Agape and Agape Media International to air a program. We've titled it Agape Live, which is the same as the Agape website, agapelive.com.
Mm-hmm.
Agape Live is the name of the program, and it is 52 episodes of sermons, talks, music, you know, the joy that we experience at Agape on Sunday mornings in service, edited into a one-hour program. And it is being aired throughout Europe, actually, in Germany and Austria and Switzerland, in the Scandinavian countries, throughout 2009 on a program there that is being broadcast by satellite. So it's via satellite, and there may be some internet broadcast as well, but this is actually going to be on a broadcast television in Europe. And Agape Media is going to be putting it online as well, so there will be coming in our planning an online channel of Agape, and of course if it's online it can be viewed around the world. So what you're imagining is in the works.
I love it. And having a show called Spiritual Hollywood, what a wonderful way to raise consciousness by using this kind of media. And I believe that it's this kind of message that media was made for. That's what I believe.
Specific, thank you. I agree with that. Although it's been used in many other forms, as we know, for many years, to scare people, to make people laugh. But you know, there's value in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're just speaking to is actually the mission of Agape Media International. And if I may, I'd like to speak to that for just a moment, because what you recited, and I appreciate that in my bio, you know, is history. But what is really present for me now is the work that I am having the opportunity to do today for Agape, where I am co-partnering and co-creating with Michael Bernard Beckwith, with a fantastic filmmaker, Mark Harris, who many people may recognize his name. He was the producer of the Academy Award-winning film Crash and Gods and Monsters and many other great productions over the years. And Ricky Byers Beckwith, who is the music and arts minister here. And the entire Agape community, which is a very rich community, particularly in the arts. There are many accomplished actors and singers and musicians and writers and authors and producers of various types here in the community. So the mission of Agape Media International, or AMI as we refer to it, from the French meaning of beloved friend, is to create media of this nature, transformational media, uplifting media, media that that uplifts the human spirit and really shows people what is true in their life, you know, what is wonderful and true in their life.
I get that completely, and if I'm not mistaken, you also have Keb Moe, who plays regularly in the Agape band, right?
Yeah, Kev is a member of Agape as well, and he does time to time show up in the band to do a little playing. He's a member of the AMI Music Vision Corps, that group of people who is advising us and each other on, you know, what's wonderful about music and where we should be going with that. So he's certainly a wonderful resource and a great person if you've had the opportunity to meet him at Agape.
He's
married to a woman who was in the Agape choir for many years, and I think that's how he became introduced to the
I see, okay. And he's a Grammy Award-winning artist and writer, and he was at my birthday party 1 year. I just stepped up, and there he was.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
and you know, he's a really sweet man and very humble and accessible.
Like you.
As well as a great talent, of course. You know.
Oh, very talented. Very talented. And, you know, when, of course, I was at the Spiritual Liberation screening premiere of the film that is now available for purchase. And what I saw in that was a day in the life of Reverend Michael Beckwith and Agape. And what I took away from that is how wonderful that anyone now who has a DVD player can experience the Agape movement with a real full experience of what it's like. And to put something like that together, I believe you guys did it in 4 days, did you not?
No, 40 days.
Let me, 40?
Yeah, 40 days.
Okay,
well, I mean, even that is miraculous. As you know, in movie making, sometimes it takes years to make a movie. The actual recording of it, I think, is maybe what you're referring to. I think that,
right,
that Mickey Willis, who is the director,
yes,
and really the visionary behind the making of the film,
mm-hmm,
you know, he's the founder of Elevate Films and the Elevate Film Festival, and another Agape member and a good friend of Reverend Michael's and AMI's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course he's known. The Elevate Film Festival is known because it's a 48-hour film festival.
Yes, I was a judge on one of the first ones.
Oh, you were.
So that's where I got confused with 4 days. I thought, of course, you're going to do it in 4 days. And Mickey even said, you know, when you have a 48-hour film festival, people expect you to do it in 48 hours.
Right. That's what I kept saying to him. Was we were all kind of living with the reality of trying to make a full-length motion picture in such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kept kidding him and saying, well, Mickey, you're the one who brought this about. You showed people that these wonderful films can be made in such a short time period, 48
mm-hmm.
hours in the case of the Elevate Film Festival. So
right.
it was joking, but I mean, the beauty of that particular process, as I think it was conceived by Elevate, is that it forces the artist and the creators and the producers to really use their instincts, really go with their intuitive sense and with their first choices, which are all, rather than you know, wringing it out and thinking everything through in great detail. On the other hand, creating great art, and particularly doing it with a level of excellence, certainly requires a period of time. So I think what Mickey may have been saying is that the principal photography occurred simply in 4 days, and then we had a substantial period of post-production, but not a long time by any comparison with what
right.
normally it takes to going into making a film. But even that number 40 days is interesting, because that's a mystical number. Jesus was in the desert for 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
The Jewish people wandered in the desert for 40 years. It appears in a lot of mystical texts and religious background, this 40-day number. And Reverend Michael himself has a book called 40-Day Mind Fast Soul Feast. So it wasn't that we set out to do it in 40 days, but it just turned out that we shot it on November 30th, and the DVD was released on January 9th, and it was exactly 40 days from the first camera rolling to the DVD being available for sale.
I believe synchronicity is divinity showing off.
That's a great
what
phrase.
I think, yes. And,
very
and,
nice.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so much inspiration at Agape, and what goes on in there. We normally go to the third service, which is Reverend Michael's third time to get up and channel the way he does.
Right.
And it's so experiential, you almost can't even describe it to anybody, what you get when you go there.
Well, I would. There are some descriptive words, however, that so that people don't think it can't be described.
Oh, it can, but I mean, it's like if
joy.
I described it, I would say
there's an overwhelming sense of joy. There's no question.
Well,
about that.
Yeah, and
there's connection with everybody you're in the room with. That you know, it's not only about what he's saying or about what the musical inspiration is singing or the choir or anything else that is occurring. There are, of course, readings and some of the standard things that you might experience in another spiritual service, but there's something different going on, and that difference has to do with the collective energy of everyone there. And then, as you're saying, he really channels these messages. I've heard people ask him if he writes them out. I know he doesn't do that. He really stands there and makes himself available for insight and inspiration, and as it comes through, he tells us. And, you know, that's very delightful to watch.
Well, another thing that's very delightful to watch is Reverend Michael's ability to be playful while he's delivering this message.
Mm-hmm.
And it's his playfulness that's so delightful, and it just has everyone take down their armor and take down their shields and just open themselves up for the time that they're there, and hopefully after they leave.
Yes, absolutely. He and that expresses itself in, you know, he's humorous. He'll tell funny stories. He'll joke with the audience. He'll hop around and be silly and dancing. Were you at church on Sunday at the 11:30 service? He struck some kind of yoga pose where he was standing on one foot with his arm extended directly in front of him and his leg extended all the way in back, or maybe ballet.
Yep.
Or something like that, and was talking in this pose. And then he suddenly realized that he was doing this, which I think he was doing unconsciously. He said, "I have no idea where that came from."
I also saw him do about 20 military push-ups while he was talking.
Yeah, he's done that too, where he gets pretty excited and just hits the deck and does 20, right?
Yeah, and it's just amazing. He just says, "I'm going to hit the deck and do 20 for you."
Yeah.
So you can do at least that many for God.
Well, for those of us who have the pleasure of knowing him and working with him, of course, he's a man of great energy, and that comes not only from his, you know, belief in life, his joy in life, but also from his very healthy eating habits.
Yes.
And one of the fun aspects of this new film, Spiritual Liberation, is that it talks about this fantastic green shake, the
yes.
almighty green shake that he makes, which uses a wonderful product created by Mitchell May called Pure Synergy. I don't know if you know Mitchell May's story, if you've ever had him on Spiritual Hollywood. But
not yet, but I do. We do drink this Pure Synergy.
Yeah, so Pure Synergy is a combination of some 50 minerals and herbs and plants and you know, all this great stuff from the earth that is all combined together, and it's kind of the heart and soul of this green drink that he has every morning. And it's a funny scene in the movie, and it sparked a lot of interest in the green drink. So we served it at the premiere that we had last week. And I think his comment about it, if I can share that, if I can remember it correctly, was every day eat something that is kissed by the sun and not messed with, did he say? Not messed with by human hands?
Yes.
Something like that. You know, something really pure, you know, from the earth, and the great health benefits of that.
Right. Well, we've been drinking a shake every day ever since the premiere. Picked up some Pure Synergy from the bookstore before we left.
Great.
And I've been putting a whole avocado in it, some almond milk, a piece of pineapple, some protein powder, and just mixing that up with some flaxseed. And it's delicious. And sometimes I'll put dates in it. But it's you can make anything out of it. And it's always green, that's going to be for sure. It's going to
yeah.
always be green. And it's really making a difference. We forget to even eat in the day if we have that in the morning, because you're full all day.
Yeah.
It's amazing stuff.
Very interesting.
I have a question for you, Stephen. And that is, I'm very curious what attracted you to the music industry in itself and the entertainment industry.
Well, that's a long story, but let me give you the short version of it. As you mentioned in my biography, I actually attended Massachusetts Institute of Technology, known for science, of course, and mathematics,
mm-hmm.
And I was studying molecular biology there. But, you know, as a young man in grade school and high school, I played music. I played saxophone and guitar and, you know, really enjoyed music. But, you know, I was shepherded as young people can be sometimes. I was also, you know, valedictorian of my high school class. So it was, well, you know, you should, you know, do something, you know, science, math, or whatever. You're a smart guy. So, you know, mm-hmm. off I went to MIT, kind of, in some ways, taking this this advice that was a more practical way to go. Although in my heart, I always had this great love of the arts and music in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as often happens in many people's lives, a tragedy occurred, and that was that my youngest sister, who was 15 at the time, was killed in an automobile accident by a drunk driver.
Mm.
Ran into the car that my younger brother was driving, and her name was Charlotte. And she was very much an artist, wrote songs at a young age, was always singing and playing and dancing and really embracing this artistic reality of who she was, you know, this part of her soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that event really changed my perspective on the world. And when I went back to MIT, back to class after her funeral and after the grieving, and all of what I was doing there just seemed very gray and cold to me. And I recognized that this really is not my tribe. This is not where I belong.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that specific event, I opened a small coffee house as a summer project the next summer after her death in my hometown of Rockford, Illinois. And some people came to that coffee house, which, you know, had original music at it every night. And they loved it, and they approached me then in my final year at MIT and said, we would love to, they were patrons of the arts. Their
mm-hmm.
names are Karen and Bill Howard. I want to name them because they were great mentors and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they said to me, if you would like to do this on a regular full-time basis here in Rockford, we'll support you, we'll get you the funding and the mortgage and the building, and let's open a performing arts center. So suddenly this way appeared for me to do what I really knew and felt was my life's work, which was to enrich people's lives with the arts and with music and with this kind of joyful inspiration through this Performing Arts Center. So I, with them, co-founded a place called Charlotte's Web, named after my sister Charlotte. And, in fact, it's still operating now 38 years later in Rockford, Illinois, and has been an engine of awareness and joy and transformation, you know, through music, through theater, in Rockford for all these years, which is why they gave me that, you know, Lifetime Achievement Award, because it kind of brought this music and arts to what was otherwise kind of an industrial Midwest town,
right,
in Illinois. And that set me on a path of, oh, so now I'm, you know, I'm a music producer, I'm in the music business, I'm doing all these other things, and I was empowered to make more choices like that. So I started producing records from the same place of entrepreneurism, which was simply, I will produce a record. I will be a record producer. And I simply chose that and did it. I put my own money into making the first album that I made, and then that sold enough that I was able to make the next album that I made and the next album that I made. And then a few years later, I said, you know, maybe what I'd like to be is I'll be a record company mogul, so I'll start a record company. So
mm-hmm.
I started my first record company, which was called Mountain Railroad Records.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on the old gospel folk song, Life is Like a Mountain Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful song, basically about, you know, you can do anything. It says, you know, keep your hand upon the throttle, keep your eye upon the rail, never falter, never fail. These are the lyrics of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And that was already then, at age 21, for me, you know, a sense that I had, an empowered sense that I have of choices are available. You just simply take them and follow your dreams and go with it. So that was how I got into the music business, and I never looked back at MIT or molecular biology.
Who could blame you? So when were you first able to bring your spirituality to your work?
Well, that's another interesting journey. That event, the death of my sister, and 10 years later, it was even more so, my oldest sister, whose name was Ellen Powers, was killed in a plane crash, a private plane crash. And the combination of those two events, although I was born a natural optimist and raised on a small farm and really had a great joy of life from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
That started to rob me of that. You know,
mm-hmm.
I started to ask myself, why me? How could this happen? This isn't fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I went through a real period of disassociation from that love of life that really had defined who I was and what I was. And along with that, I completely, you know, had no interest whatsoever anymore in any kind of spiritual tradition. And I'll say in any religion. I was raised Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I felt completely abandoned by, you know, God, basically, and angry at God about what had happened in my life, which was, of course, a misapplication of where that energy should have gone, I now understand. But basically, I did nothing in terms of spiritual exploration for many, many years. And but I did finally kind of, you know, work out my feelings about these losses in my life and moved on with my life, and all was well. And then one day a friend of mine came to me and said, I go to this place called Agape. This is now 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and you would really enjoy it. You know, it just resonates with the same kind of energy as you have, which is this optimism and this love of life.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, and particularly, you'll like the music. And he knew I was into music and working in the music business. I think I was at Capitol Records at the time. And he said, so you'll really enjoy the music. So I went with him. And it was the first time I saw Ricky Byers Beckwith.
Mm.
And I loved it. I loved the music. I was not in tune yet with Reverend Michael's message, because his message requires a certain, you think it requires a certain awareness. You learn later that it doesn't, that it just activates you on a cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, I was still trying to intellectualize what he was saying about God, about spirit, and it was a whole new way of thinking, and I didn't quite catch that initially. But I did catch the music, and I loved the music, so I kept coming back. And that really began my reconnection to my spiritual self and to that aspect of my life, and that has really come through, you know, my involvement in the Agape community.
That's wonderful. I just feel that, you know, there are a lot of people, Stephen, and I'm sure you know this, and a lot of them come to Agape, and they're just everywhere. If you had three action steps for someone out there who's listening, whose heart has closed because of a tragedy in their life like you had, and their heart's just closed, they've lost their joy for life, and they just don't feel invigorated or optimistic anymore, and they're a little bit mad at God, how would you tell them to get their heart open in three action steps? I know that's asking for a lot, and I just feel like that needs to be said.
Excellent question. The first thing that I would say, this again, I'm speaking from my own experience,
what
worked for me,
okay?
The first thing was to keep moving forward. So by that I mean get up the next day and do something that you love, or in my case, find something specific that you can do to turn that tragedy into something positive. So I felt like by founding Charlotte's Web in my sister's name and honor, that I was taking some kind of action that was going to contribute back to the community. So even though on an internal level I was still angry and upset and grieving, I was doing something and doing something that I loved and enjoyed. So I would say the first action step is to keep moving forward. You know, do what you love and continue doing it, even though it may not feel good at the time, and even though you're going to, you know, have moments where you'll really feel lost and sad.
Yeah.
Another thing, and I've shared this with people who have experienced great tragedy, is to grieve and to do that out loud. I mean, I would just sit down wherever I was when the feeling hit me and cry.
Yeah.
And really let that emotion out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a very, and I know counselors advise that anyway, but,
right.
You know, rather than keeping it in, rather than trying to be brave, I was not in the least bit brave. You know, I was very upset, very unhappy, and very sad. And when that sadness overcame me, I cried.
Good.
And I still cry today. You know, there's a part of me that is still very raw emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an important action step, but certainly to get in motion, you know, with doing something. And then I think it really requires, for me, it required an examination of what really happened, you know, because I am something of an intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
So it required something of an intellectual examination to say, well, you know, really, is there anybody to blame? Is there any reason why? Is there anything that I can really learn from this? And there wasn't. There was no lesson about anything I'd done wrong or anything that either my sisters had done wrong or that, you know, anything that could have been different. It just happened. So it required a kind of an acceptance, I guess is the biggest word. I really had to come to a place of acceptance to say, this is just what's so. Now, I got the rest of my life. So, you know, I can either stay stuck in that energy or I can go back to being the person that I was before this happened. And that was the obvious choice for me.
Those are all wonderful action steps. And I know that just the right people heard what you said. And those words had to come from you and your personal experience, which is why I felt moved to ask you that question. And I completely agree with you that when you're feeling grief, to completely express it, you know, find a way to do it safely in a way that doesn't hurt anyone or hurt yourself and just get it out, because trauma does get trapped in your tissues and then you end up with issues in your tissues.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to need to do other things to get that out. So if you're trembling and you're shaking and you're vibrating inside and you feel out of sorts, just know in your awareness that that's those feelings working through you, and the only way out of them is through.
Yes.
The only way out is through. So that was wonderful, wonderful advice. And
the other thing I would say, I just will share one other thing, is there are many wonderful healers in this world, you know, that whose gift really is to be there as a healer for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly seeking those kinds of people out and asking for help when you need it is very important.
Well, also, too, I'll just add this. We're an example of the five people we spend the most time with. So if you're grieving and you're in a very sad place and your heart is closed down, to keep yourself exposed to people who are feeling that way too will not help you get out of it.
So what you want to do is
reach outside of those five people that you spend the most time with and start incorporating other higher frequency healer type people to help love you out of it and through it.
Yeah, and eventually it's important that it's not even something that you're even too present to. You know, it's not something you're continually repeating. Like, you know, you say, who are you? You know, it's not in my bio that this is what I went through. It's not who I am.
Right.
It is now history. It's an experience. I learned. I grew from it. I have accepted it. But it is in no way who I am. And if it continues to be who you are and you say, this is what defines me, then you're going to stay stuck in that tragedy, in that negativity, in, you know, in that energy.
Because we are just that powerful to be the creator of our existence.
Yes.
By what we declare. And if my identity is from something that was tragic from my past and I keep that as my identity, I can never grow beyond that.
Right.
And you've obviously grown beyond whatever limitations were put in front of you. And, you know, I'm just very pleased that you're following your heart the way that you are. I've met your family. You've got two beautiful children and another on the way.
Yes.
And a beautiful wife and a great house and, you know, just a wonderful life. And you're also an example of having it all, Stephen.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. I'm very grateful for all the great, great things that have occurred in my life. And
that's obvious.
All the wonderful friends that, you know, who really, you know, support me and love me. And you know, in some ways, I think make it easy to show up as a loving person, because you know, we're so surrounded with this love and with this joy and with this caring, as you know, you can see it and you can reflect it and just be a part of that cycle.
Right. And you know, if I were to describe the experience I have at Agape when I go,
mm-hmm.
I would say it's like getting a giant hug from God.
That's a good description.
And that's what it feels like for me. And when I look at everybody around me, and especially when we're welcoming the new people who haven't been there before, wow, that's just, the connection is just off the charts, because everyone stands up who has never been there before, and then we all aim our hands at somebody and hold the space for them while we welcome them and let them know that we appreciate them and we know who they really are, and that, as Reverend Michael says, they're chipped off the old spiritual block.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, welcome them, and their eyes fill with tears, and they feel so much love, and it's reciprocal.
Yeah.
And it's contagious.
That's always been my favorite moment in the service. It had always been, and still is, because it's an opportunity to give to these people who are coming for the first time, and to give them love, to give them recognition, to to really look at them as the congregation says, we know who you really are,
right?
And to recognize them as the divine presence, the godlike, you know, the God presence that they are. And I just love that because you know, I know everybody at Agape feels this way, but it just feels so good to give and to share and to be able to support other people. And by doing that, of course, you know, we get that in return.
Right. I have a saying, life is forgiving, not forgetting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I'd like to ask you next is, what do you think that it'll take for others in the entertainment industry to allow spirit in music, TV, and films, to just really, really embrace it?
Well, before I say that, there's something I would say about this that I've been kind of on a soapbox about this for many years, because I hear often from people that, you know, the film industry, the music business, and the other aspects of Hollywood per se are full with lousy people and scummy people, and there's a generally negative sensibility about who's in the industry and who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my experience has been that the people in the effective people, the powerful people, the people who are in good positions in this industry are many of them, if not most of them, are great people. They really are. I mean, this has just been my experience. I guess there are bad people out there, but I see a lot of hardworking people whose interest, they love the arts, and their interest is in creating great art and helping other artists to create great art and to inspire people in doing that. So I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a bad rap. On the other hand, I recognize that it is a business, and and you have to deal with those realities of these are corporations. They have shareholders and investors who are seeking a certain return on investment,
mm-hmm.
33% return on investment or something. And if they can't get it from the entertainment business, they're going to take their money out of the entertainment business and go put it in oil and gas or real estate or whatever they think is going to give it to them,
mm-hmm.
because they're simply money players. You know, they're there for the financial return. So the people who are running these companies and the top executives have got to keep that in mind, that is their mandate. They have not been incorporated to inspire and transform. On the other hand, what they all want to do is be successful. So I think that the shift that is occurring, that we all feel and recognize that is occurring in humanity, in the United States and perhaps on the West Coast in particular, where it's a very strong movement, is changing the realities of business, such that if there is not a strong intention, a good intention to underlying the type of work that you're doing or the product that you're creating, it is now out of resonance with where human evolution has gone, where the world is today, and it won't be successful. So in order to be successful, it needs that good intention as a part of it. It can't just be a product for its own sake.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to shift. So partly I think there will just be this global shift that is already occurring,
mm-hmm.
that will make it such that the products themselves must have that. And as soon as that's the case, then the businesses themselves will shift because they're going to continue to want to pursue success.
Right.
So that's partly going to happen. I think that we try to continue to invite everyone we know, persons like myself who have contacts, who know people in the industry, to, you know, whether it's at Agape or some other spiritual center or some other wisdom tradition from which they can learn and grow, to get involved in that and then grow themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these companies are people at their core, so they are a reflection of the people who are running them. So the change occurs at the level, at the human level,
mm-hmm.
and then it manifests at the business level. So I think that's part of it. I think that every time someone goes out and demonstrates success, that it has a way of shifting the business environment.
Yeah.
So when, you know, The Secret is made, the movie, of course, the famous movie from a couple years ago about the law of attraction,
mm-hmm.
and it sells 6 million units, or maybe it's now up to 10 million or something. I know it was 6 million more than a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and millions and millions of books. Then people, the industry and the people who are in these positions recognize, they say, okay, there's something happening over here,
mm-hmm.
and it sold a lot of units.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pull and a push for them to do similar type of work.
Mm-hmm.
So by that, I you know, there's an old phrase, talent creates the marketplace. So in this case, the talent of the people who created The Secret showed the marketplace that spiritual, inspirational, transformational media is big business.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're shown that it's big business, that's, you know, they're going to follow.
Yep.
Whether they care about it or not, they'll do it because, you know, they can make money at it.
Absolutely. And what I was noticing when you were sharing just now, which was all beautifully answered my question, is that for you specifically, when I asked the question what it'll take for the entertainment industry to allow spirit in, I get that that's because we see the world not as it is, but as we are. And your answer told me so much more about you.
Mm. Yeah, so you mean in terms of the good people that I've met along the way.
Yes, because you're a good person, that's really all you see. So,
yeah, I worked for, you skipped this in my biography, but I worked for a consumer electronics company for 7 years as president of a company called Miller & Kreisel Sound.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Kreisel was the wonderful founder of that company, a great inventor, a true genius, invented the subwoofer and, you know, in the time that I was at M&K, M&K speakers were used in making 7 consecutive Oscar-winning films that won the Oscar for the best sound design.
Mm.
So, I mean, this man was truly a genius. And he used to tell people as we would meet, he'd say, you know what I love about Stephen is he sees the best in everybody. And he said, and we make a good team because I see the worst in everybody. So I can be the skeptic and he can be the optimist, and together we're a good team.
Balance.
And I always kind of took that as a compliment, and I was sort of glad that I was the guy seeing the best in everybody.
Right, right, with the white hat. But, you know, there's contrast in everything.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's saying something good about you, somebody somewhere else is balancing that by saying something not so good about you, and somebody saying something not so good about you, you can count on, in the next second, somebody saying something good about you. So, you know, it's contrast, and without contrast, we really don't have a reality because we have nothing to compare anything to.
Right. And his point is very valid, which is that one cannot be Pollyanna, one can't be blue sky, you know, one has to have one's feet on the ground. It's
mm-hmm.
great to have this understanding that all is well and that the best is always happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also good to have a strategy, to have good planning, to actually do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think, in some ways where, you know, The Secret sort of left off,
mm-hmm.
is that they showed people that first you shift in consciousness, in awareness, and in what you think about, but then you better go out and do some hard work. You know,
right.
The old adage about it's 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration, I still believe that's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about getting up every day and doing the work, not
right.
just imagining the success.
Well, I clearly see that everyone at Agape certainly does. I think the first service is, what, 6:30 in the morning?
Yeah, and people are packing in there, you bet.
And is it, I haven't been to the 6:30 one. Is it just as busy as the 11 o'clock one?
It's not just as busy, but there are, you know, on average, I would say 800 people who get up at that hour of the morning. And it's a wonderful service. I certainly encourage people who have never been to Agape, or maybe some of the many people, and I've encountered many such people in Los Angeles over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
With the great growth and interest in Agape as a result of Reverend Michael's being in The Secret, being on Oprah, being on Larry King, and all the exposure that the Agape movement has had, there's been a, you know, tremendous growth in attendance at Agape.
Yes.
And many people have said to me, I used to come to Agape all the time, but it's busy now, and it's so full, and, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get a seat, I don't know if I'm going to get a parking space, and so I don't come anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're looking for a new building and a way to accommodate more people
mm-hmm.
so that everybody will be comfortable. But in the meantime, you can come to the 6:30 service, and you'll certainly get in. So I encourage anybody who would like to come, you know, just get to bed a little early on that Saturday night. And what's beautiful about it is that, first off, the Rev is always highly energized,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he's up and he's happening and he gets up this hour of the morning every morning. So he's lasered, he's focused, and he delivers, you know, a very concise and precise message that has a difference and a power that is different than the 11:30. By the time he gets to the 11:30, he's having fun and he's joking around and everything gets a little bit more expansive. And that's fun in its own way.
Right.
But certainly that early service. And I, because I was working here, have been doing that for several years, coming that early, although I don't need to anymore,
mm-hmm.
You know, has its own wonderful character.
Right, right. And you're getting him fresh, too. And I happen to know, I heard the Rev say, you know, I was meditating this morning and I couldn't get what would my message be today. And, He said, I just said to myself, well, I'm not going until I get it. I'm just not going to go until I get it. So he just started just allowing himself to surrender to whatever needed to be said through him, and it finally came. And when he got it, it was about, oh, I forget what the topic was, but it was brilliant, and it was just a brilliant talk. And he was not going to leave the house until he got something to give everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just built on that for that whole day. And, you know, that'll probably be in one of your songs.
What time did he actually show up for service? He got there for the early service?
He did. He did. He just said he wasn't leaving till it came, and then he asked for inspiration, and it came, and then he goes, okay, I'll go.
Okay, good.
Because he got excited then, but he doesn't leave the house unless he's inspired by something coming through him.
I've never seen him at a loss for words, so that would be unusual.
I've never either, but you know what? Every now and then it happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when I read your bio, for some reason the type on my printer just made it all blurry, so I was having trouble keeping up with myself reading your bio, and I left some things out on purpose because I wanted you to tell us your idea of it and your version of it, because just reading it from a paper doesn't describe you at all.
Yeah, well, I sort of at my heart, at the first level, I define myself really in my work in two ways. In my work as an entrepreneur, I've always been a creator of companies, founder of companies, leader of companies, and I love that entrepreneurial energy where you envision something, you set out to do it, and you do it, and you're not beholden to somebody else to make it happen for you. You make it happen for yourself.
Right.
So, you know, that creative energy of an entrepreneur is something I've always identified with and defined myself as an entrepreneur. Secondarily, but on the same level with that, I think of myself as a producer, and I enjoy very much that creative process of actually creating artistic content, whether it was music or the television programs or, you know, this recent film, Spiritual Liberation, where I was able to participate primarily in the area of music, but in other ways too. So, you know, I just love the idea. And again, that's that same entrepreneurial creative energy where you build something up and it occurs.
Right. So. And you know, I also have a saying, what you think about, you bring about. And it's obvious that you've been thinking about some very good things.
Yeah. In fact, one of the things that is my new mission for 2009 is to actually settle down a little bit. One of the things I've learned here at Agape is that if I can just kind of quiet my mind and expand my meditation practice, which is limited. I do some of it. I practice yoga. I used to run for years. I enjoyed marathoning, and for me that was an active meditation. When I really, you know, I ran long distances, and you know, you really get into a mind space there where you're, you know, the chatter and the thinking and the analyzing all kind of quiets down. And into that quiet space can come, you know, some real insight and creative ideas. So I'm looking to develop that aspect of who I am even more this year. But, yeah, I have a pretty active mind.
Yeah, and you have an active life. And I'm really happy to hear that you're settling down a bit more and not going in anymore at 6 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, you have your new daughter coming soon, and she'll want to enjoy your company a lot, and it's nice that you're making time for your family like that in a different way. And I know you always do make time for your family. I mean, I see your children with you all the time, and you're just great with them. You're just wonderful with them. Do you have?
Well, they are, as any parent can tell you, they are a tremendous transformation in one's life. They're a great joy personally in my life. I'd like to, you know, just give a little shout-out to my wife here, Tigress, who is a wonderful mom and makes it possible for me to dedicate so much time to Agape and to this media, transformational media work that I do, because, you know, she's there 24/7 for our children. And I could see myself being an even better father, certainly, and spending more time with them in particular, and I'd like to do that. And it is it's a pull, you know, between what we are out in the world and the kind of work that I've done, and there's a whole world to inspire and transform and to be a part of. And then, you know, there's your family right at home who are really the essence of it, and to try to find that balance. And, you know, I'll just speak it now that better balance, that was my my mission for last year, and it's and I think it needs to continue to be for this coming year, because if you know, I tend to work a lot.
Well, I can raise my hand and ask you if you want my opinion.
Yeah, please do.
Okay.
Give me some advice on this.
From what I've seen of you, I've been to your home for some functions that you've had. I've seen you with your children at Agape. I've seen you a lot. And I see pure balance going on, because when your children are with you and you're managing, you know, one of the tents outside and your kids are going, Dad, I'm thirsty, and you say, oh, I don't know where I put your water. And then you get them some water and everybody waits, and it's, I see balance there. I think you're more balanced than you think you are, and perfectionists never do get it right, do they?
Ah, yes. You've identified me. Well, thank you for that. I'll accept that. And
from one to another.
Appreciate it. Yes.
I do.
That's another good practice, right? To let go of those perfectionist tendencies.
Well, yeah, because, you know, we're human spirit, and we're in a physical body, and we've got one shot in this go-around in these physical shoes, and, you know, if you just really get clear about that, you'll bounce out of bed in the morning, let your left foot be Fank and your right foot be you until you get your teeth brushed at least,
mm-hmm.
and start the day with that kind of gratitude. And, you know, sometimes we all forget why we're here. Some of us don't even know yet. And the Agape movement is really a wonderful source for figuring that out, because I believe the key to life is finding out your purpose and then following that. And when you're doing your purpose, you can do it all day. It gives you vitality, and it just gives you such energy. And that's when you know that you're doing your purpose, you're living your purpose. So, you know, even if it's a person at Starbucks working behind the counter, if they're loving talking to people, it's what they're meant to be doing. I think we have a caller. Hello, caller?
Yes. Hello.
Hi, who are we speaking to?
This is Charles Holt.
Hello, Charles.
Charles Holt. So, yes. Hello, Charles.
Hello.
Charles is one of the wonderful musicians who performs at Agape on a regular basis. He is a member of our community.
Wonderful.
He is one of our Agape media artists and a healer and a transformer and an inspiration himself. Hello, Charles.
Hey, Stephen, how are you?
I'm well, enjoying this conversation with Kate.
Thank you for calling.
How are you? Thank you. I just wanted to acknowledge and call and thank you for the work that you're doing, Kate. And it's so important that we all understand that there is the higher call for all of us down here. And I just heard you making mention to the person working at Starbucks or wherever the person is working, and the divine plan that they have chosen to unfold, no matter where they are in their journey. So,
mm-hmm.
My hat's off to you, and my hat's off to Stephen for being an integral part of my my ability and my willingness to move even further into the greater yet to be that I've been called down here to do through music and through writing and things like that. So, you know, I wanted to call in and just say thank you.
You're quite welcome, and we are thanking you as well.
You're welcome.
Charles is a wonderful example. I want to encourage our other listeners to check out his music. He has an album released by Agape Media called I Am, that is very worth hearing. And it's great, because about once a week I'll get an email from Charles that he's gotten from somewhere around the country. He tours a lot. He was on Broadway, and he goes out and he'll play at particularly spiritual communities, and almost inevitably he'll get a letter following that where someone will write in and they'll say, well, I came to hear a concert, but my whole life was transformed or healed by what I experienced.
Yeah, we're at the end of the Spiritual Hollywood Hour. Can you believe it flew by so fast?
No.
Do you have a website for that album?
Yes, you can either go to my website, which is Charles Holt Productions, productions.com, and my last name is spelled Holt, Charles Holt, H-O-L-T, or you can go to agapelive.com and go to the Quiet
Wonderful.
Mind bookstore icon.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to say hi to you next time I'm at Agape, Charles.
Okay.
I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for calling in, Charles. Thank you, Stephen, for making time. You're just the brightest light, and keep shining it. And I can't wait to find out what else you've got in store for the world and all of us and your family and yourself. And just want to tell our listeners, I really appreciate you out there, and I want you to know that the last six letters of attraction are action. Stephen Powers is an example of being in action, and all of us can do that. It's our birthright. Go and claim it. Thank you, everyone, and good night.
Thank you very much, Kate.